Hello everyone, hello football fans around the world. Welcome to the Squawker Talker. It's only 2 days away from Euro 2016 and we're going to be talking a little bit about England's chances. That squeaking you might have heard in the background is our chief reporter Greg Stobart, who's failing to get comfortable in his chair. How are you doing, Greg?
Hello Nick, I'm alright.
You're alright? Is that chair giving you jib?
I'm alright, I'm staying still now.
Alright, okay, don't stay too still, we don't want you to feel rigid. Also joining us is social media director James McManus. Hello James.
Hello, I'm very comfortable, no squeaking this end.
No squeaking from the McManus end. Okay, fantastic, so let's talk a little bit about England. It's only 2 days away. How warm is this room I've just noticed that we're sitting in? It is going to get muggy in here.
Close, isn't it? It's very close.
Yeah, very close. But not as close as the England team, according to the England team, according to Stuart Pearce, who believes they have a similar synergy to the Euro 96 squad, which obviously the anniversary of the first game that they played in that tournament was 20 years ago. Greg, how do you assess this England team? How do they stack up against previous teams? You know, we've been talking a lot about the 86, 96, 06 squads. And what are their chances for this tournament, you know?
Well, it's the best squad we've had for a while. I think it's best since 2004, you'd probably say.
Yeah.
Having been to the last few tournaments with England, I was at the last Euros and the last World Cup. You went there with no expectation whatsoever from this England team. But now there's a bit of excitement. I think we gave Roy Hodgson a free pass 4 years ago. Then you saw it as a work in progress when they didn't do particularly well at the World Cup, or didn't do well at all at the World Cup.
So we gave him another free pass.
He's got to deliver now, and England have got to deliver, and can't argue with the qualifying campaign. And really, what can you learn from the friendlies? I'm just a bit worried that he's going to sacrifice balance in the side to squeeze players in. We saw it in that Portugal game. Ledley King did a really good column on it for us this week. I really hope that he's brave. I don't think he's going to be able to squeeze Rooney, Vardy and Harry Kane into the same side. Pretty much every side plays the 4-2-3-1. Do that, pick your best players, and England will at least get to the knockout stages, probably standard quarter-final exit.
James, that's what everyone's talking about, is it seems that England, if they're going to have any chance of properly competing in this tournament, semi-finals onwards, is by outscoring their opponents. It doesn't look like they can do that if they shoehorn Rooney into the side.
Yeah, I mean, he's the big elephant in the room, isn't he? Because you've got to play him for some unknown reason. You have to play him. You've got Moyes. Moyes? You haven't got Moyes. You've got Kane. We wish we had Moyes. You've got Kane and Vardy.
Moyes and Vardy.
I was talking about Moyes just before I came in. I don't know why. England do not have Moyes. Rest easy now, listeners. Rest easy. He's not replacing Roy.
Man United fan having heart attacks.
What? David Moyes? You've got Kane and Vardy, and you've just got to start both of them. You just have to. Dele Alli was excellent in the number 10 role against Germany, and then we get close to the Euros and Roy's sort of reverting to type, cautious Roy. That's probably not going to catch on, that nickname. It's not the sexiest nickname.
Cautious Roy.
Yeah. doesn't even rhyme.
It sounds like a Green Cross Code mascot of some sort. Yeah, cautious Roy.
It's no coincidence that our best performance in a while, barring the Switzerland game, that was against Germany, and Rooney wasn't playing because you had Dele Alli behind Kane. And Greg made the point to me the other day, on the tube, if we get the tube, Gerrard was best for Liverpool with Torres, just behind Torres, and you've got Kane and Ali are kind of got that relationship as well, so you've got to play people in pairs, what they're comfortable with, and Rooney doesn't know how to play with Kane, and Kane doesn't know how to play with Rooney, so why are we splitting centre-forwards out wide so Rooney can do what exactly?
It seems pretty certain that Roy's going to move on after this tournament. Unless we win,
I'm not 100%. I was convinced that O'Neill and Keane were going to do that with Republic of Ireland. But the thing is, everyone who was a main contender 18 months ago, Gary Monk, Gary Neville even.
Alan Pardew,
they've all kind of fallen by the wayside. And if you're in the FA boardroom, who do you... Say England get a quarter-final exit and flattered to deceive. Do you sack Roy? Probably not, because he's done a pretty good job at bringing through youth players. But who else do you appoint? There isn't really anyone apart from Eddie Howe.
Well, that's the question. I think Eddie Howe's the only one I can think of, really, as a training ground coach. And even he would probably want to have time with the players to work on them in training. And he probably, at his age, he probably needs the experience and wants the experience of working in club football.
The job for an old man, isn't it, for international football? Italy employed a 68-year-old yesterday, which is the most Italy appointment ever in Gianpiero Venturi. So it's not a job for a young man. Mourinho's always said that when he was approached by England before. He said, oh, I'm a bit young for it. I might want to manage Portugal in 15 years' time. Apart from Eddie Howe, I genuinely have no idea. We might have to employ a foreign coach, which, you know, all the best coaches are foreign, but that seems to be something they were trying to move away from.
Yeah.
I think the FA are genuinely hoping that Hodgson can do enough to keep his job. They know 3 failures in 3 tournaments and he's got to go.
Yeah.
They're waiting and they're hoping, come on, some good performances, get to the quarterfinals or semi-finals and then give him another couple of years.
So what would represent, Greg, in your opinion, what would represent success for Roy? What would it take to sort of be considered, okay, yeah, this is a successful side? I mean, that Euro 96 squad, which everyone's getting very nostalgic about, they only made the semi-finals, you know, they're not exactly world beaters.
And to win a tournament, you only need to play well once or twice, really, let's be honest. You can scrap that Euro 96. They were terrible against Switzerland in the first game. They weren't particularly good in the first half against Scotland. And then the momentum built with the Gazza goal against Scotland and the Holland performance.
Germany at the World Cup were only good in the Brazil game in the final. They were rubbish against Algeria.
They were all right against Portugal, but
they should have gone out against Algeria. Yeah. Algeria battered them.
Yeah. And they beat France 1-0 with a header. It wasn't particularly special.
That was a freak result when they took that form into the final. You just have to peak at the right time, basically.
Yeah, I think for England, you're looking at quarterfinals minimum. And it's more about performance. You want to see the team playing well. You don't want the functional, boring football. You want to see the likes of Dele Alli, Harry Kane playing as they do for Tottenham with the one-touch football, the quick movement and the passing. If we're playing boring, functional football and we scrape out of the group stages and get no further, I think the goodwill towards the team at the moment will disappear pretty quickly.
We've got the youngest player at the Euros in Marcus Rashford. He's the youngest player at the entire tournament. In terms of average squad age, England have the youngest squad at the entire tournament. So we have to play to that strength. We can't just keep reverting back and go, oh, we'll dump Milner in midfield 3 and Rooney behind the front 2. Like they're all right, but they're stodge, aren't they? So let's play our young, exciting talent. Let's scare teams, because we actually genuinely in our squad have the sort of fluid, dynamic players that you can imagine the opposition going, oh, don't fancy playing against them today. Let's use them.
Okay. Well, with that in mind, what would represent, you know, disappointment for the England side? Because it's a weird team. You know, it is an odd sort of, there's not much hype around the team, but at the same time, people are thinking, oh, they might be dark horses. Greg, do you stick by the sort of, it has to be quarterfinals? Anything less than that is a real letdown for this squad?
Yeah, it's a good squad. You look at the young players. You look at the young players in the squad. You'd say 4 years ago and 2 years ago, we were miles away. But actually, I think we've got a pretty good squad, and that's why England are among the favourites. And it's really difficult for Hodgson because all his good players are attackers. All the good young players, you know, even when you think about Sterling and Sturridge, probably going to be on the substitute bench, and they're two of the most talented players in the country.
It's absurd when you think about it, isn't it?
Yeah, there's an awful lot of talent out there. It's hard for Hodgson to get the best out of them when he's got no defenders as well. But you need to see some progress. And yeah, for me, it's got to be quarterfinals minimum. Obviously, it depends who you come up against, but it'd be an absolute disaster if England are out of it in the group stage again, which I can't see happening with the group they've got.
We were out after 2 games at the World Cup, weren't we? So it can't happen again. Firstly, we can't lose to Wales. Secondly, we need at least 7 points, I'd suggest, from the group to build a bit of momentum. And thirdly, we have to show up in a big game at a major tournament. If we flop it against the first big team we play against, then our record in friendlies since the World Cup against big nations has been reasonably good.
Yeah,
we kind of show up in the big games when the pressure's off. I want to see them able to do that in the tournament. And that's where a manager earns his money. I don't think Roy's a groundbreaking coach on the pitch and on the training ground, but it's how he motivates the players, how Neville and that get into him at the change room at halftime. That's going to be the difference.
Yeah, I was talking to Stuart Pearce yesterday, and he was talking about how...
Ooh, good name drop.
Yeah, yeah, very good name drop.
I was talking to Stuart Pearce of the afternoon.
Me and Stu, you know, we were just having a cup of tea, just talking about Euro 96 and Nigel Winterburn. And he was saying that, it is just about that momentum. And the first game is going to be so important for England because they are against Russia, who are, what you mentioned the word stodge earlier, they are the stodgiest team at the Euros. Ignashevich and Berezutsky at centre-back. Who should Roy just pick? Strongest 11, 4-4-2 diamond? That should be his approach, should be, this is our best team, this is what we go for. Or is he going to try and sort of think tactically with regards to they're a bit slow at the back, try and find some pace up behind?
I don't think he should play the diamond in the first place, but I think he will. I think Macca touched on a point before about playing against the better teams. I think it would actually suit England more when they play, when they can counter attack and they've got a bit of space, especially when you think about the likes of Jamie Vardy, Dele Alli, who've got got the legs. I think where England are going to struggle actually is when they're, a team sits deep, like you saw Portugal do, Turkey to an extent, when they sit deep and ask England to break them down, because there's not an awful lot of creativity, not an awful lot of space.
Well, isn't that where the substitutions of Sterling and Sturridge can really, really help the team out?
Yeah, and he's got to use his bench wisely if he gets it wrong with his starting 11. And you'd say Hodgson hasn't been the best proactively or reactively for England. I think he's, like Macca said, he can be quite set in his ways, and he's got to be able to change it more quickly than he has in the past. And like you said, I think Sterling in particular, I actually think he's looked quite sharp. He's starting to look a bit better. He's starting to drop a shoulder and get past players again. And off the bench, that could be a really, really important weapon, because there's no one in the starting lineup who can actually take a man on at the moment.
There's a lot of legs left in Sterling and Sturridge in particular because of missed swathes for the season through injury. Vardy might be a bit leggy at points. Same with Kane, because they've played 35 games each, I think, in the league, and cup competitions on top of that. Sturridge played 15, 16 in the league in the end, and Sterling must have played mid-20s. So they're just kind of finding their flow again. They really, really... When you think about other countries like the Euros, do they have an impact sub, the quality of Daniel Sturridge or Raheem Sterling? Not many do, really.
As impact subs go, they're fantastic. So what would be... So James, what would be your starting 11 for this game? I mean, I think you're going to go with Joe Hart in goal.
Yeah, I'm going to shock everyone. Go Joe Hart. I know it looks like it's going to be Walker and Rose, and I get the why you do it. They've been playing McCain all season, but I think Bertrand and Klein are our best two fullbacks.
Is Bertrand going to be fit, though? Is he going to make
it? Yeah, that's
a bit touch and go.
I think Danny Rose is a bit... he switches off a lot, and...
He made one mistake against Turkey, and you said he switched
behind.
A lot.
But
he doesn't do it a lot. He's had a fantastic season.
That ball in behind. I just think Bertrand's a little harder. For me, I like a tough fullback. Somebody can crunch someone.
Oh, Danny Rose is crunch people. I play Klein over Walker, probably. I think Klein's a better player and slightly better defender. But Danny Rose has been the best left Klein, back in the country this
Klein's
year.
A bit suspect in the air, but again, Walker's just
Walker
able
is
to drop,
Walker
go,
does
go a wander every now and again.
Sorry, Macca. Walker does switch off, and he's a real risk. He'll make one howler a game that at this level can really cost you.
So you're going for Rose and Walker. Greg's incandescent about your criticism of
the
England fullbacks. wait till Piercy gets
Danny
rid of this.
Danny Rose is getting like a nice text after this. Don't worry, Danny, I'll stuck up for you now. Klein and Bertrand, if he's fit. I like Danny Rose. If Bertrand's not fit, happy to go Danny Rose. Centre-halves, it has to be Kale, Smalling. John Stones doesn't know where to stand. Like, he fundamentally doesn't position. He's awful. He can be as good as you want on the ball.
Always in front of the yellow line on the tube?
He just sort of doesn't pick up his man. He's always 5 yards where he should be. In the way that John Terry was always exactly where he needed to be, defending the front post off a cross or going with a man or covering, John Stones is the opposite. Everyone keeps saying, oh, you can play for Barcelona. It's like, no, you need to be good to play for Barcelona. They don't just pass the ball. Gerard Piqué's a fantastic defender. He doesn't just pass it for 90 minutes. And, it'd be them two. Eric Dier in front of the back four because he's just a machine. He looks like he's in a Territorial Army advert, doesn't he?
He does, doesn't
like,
he?
He looks like he could run up Ben Nevis back in 20 minutes.
Yeah.
With a fridge on his back.
He's like an engineer. He doesn't actually go out and kill people. He's just an engineer.
Yeah,
he's
just solid, isn't he? Got to play him. Henderson, if he's fit, I think his energy. He got slagged off a bit during the Germany game, but he was the only centre midfielder I saw pressing them in their final third. Still, if he's fully fit, I think he's got to start because he's the most energetic of our centre mid.
Could be useful against minnows as well, against
some
of the weaker teams.
Yeah. I agree with Greg, I wouldn't go with the diamond. I'd play a three, and I'd play Dele Alli in the number 10 role. I think you've got this freakish talent. You've got to give him the platform to perform.
Mm-hmm.
Just get out of the way, Rooney. We're playing Dele Alli. I play Sterling wide on the left, Vardy on the right, and Kane through the middle.
Vardy on the right?
I mean, against Russia in particular, they play a 3-5-2 most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And like you mentioned, both like three of their centre-backs are all 30 plus, so they're not going to like running into their own corner flag with Jamie Vardy running after it.
That is a very, very good point. Greg, you look like you've got many riposts.
No, it's actually, I think it's actually, it's not, it's a decent team, Mecca. And also, you've only got one player out of position, and we're a bit worried that Roy's going to play three or four of them out of position.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's very good points.
I'd go Joe Hart in goal. I'd go Nathaniel Klein. Agree with you on Cahill and Smalling, although I think
Danny Rose at left back.
Danny Rose at left back. And also, he's so sharp, Danny Rose, physically.
Mm.
England's Rose, isn't he?
Nicking the quick balls, I think he's really important, especially as if we play the diamond, you need the width, which is why if we play the diamond, Kyle Walker's more likely to play.
Yeah.
Then I'd go for Eric Dyer next to Jack Wilshere. I think we need that. We need Wilshere to keep the ball. He's looked okay when he's played, but I think he's in that position, he's as good as we've got. I get Macca's point about Henderson's legs, but I want someone who's going to keep the ball and calm it down. And you talk about the likes of Paul Scholes and Michael Carrick, who are criminally underused by England in the past, where we've got Jack Wilshere, someone who can pass a ball and keep it, and I think we should build around him there. I'd do Raheem Sterling out on the right. I'd play Dele Alli, number 10, like Macca. I think that, you know, it's all about partnerships. We mentioned the Alli and Kane partnership before.
So
important. And they both score goals as well.
Yeah.
I think Alli to Kane was, I think, maybe number one in assisted
most,
goals.
Yeah, most common assisted goal partnership.
Eight in the Premier League this season. Yeah. So the relation, they love playing together, don't they?
Yeah.
So
out on the left, I wish Danny Welbeck was fit because I'd have played him.
He'd have started for me as well.
Yeah, he'd be perfect. But I'd stick Wayne Rooney out there. You could put Lallana, Vardy. I think it's actually a problem with no proper wide men as well.
Wayne Rooney out on the left.
I put him out on the left.
He was good for United. All those years ago,
when he wasn't the most important player in United team. They built around Ronaldo and he did a job for United out on the left. And that, frankly, if he's going to be in a team, just have him doing a job somewhere for England now, because there are better, more dynamic, better quality players at the moment. Then I'd have Harry Kane up front, which means you've got Jamie Vardy, Daniel Sturridge, Raheem Sterling all to come off the bench or to come into the side.
We're good up front.
The
England guys are good up front. Let's see if Roy can make the best use of that. That's enough talk about England. Next, let's talk about some of the exciting transfer rumours that have been swirling in the great nebula, which is the transfer window.
That's it, sound effects. Like the guy from a police academy.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. probably the biggest one recently, or at least over the last past 24 hours, is the word that Aubameyang Man City are extremely interested in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Stobes, what have you heard about this?
Well, weirdly, City are actually playing this down a little bit.
Playing it down, would you?
They're a little bit surprised that the reports have been that the talks are very advanced and it sounds like it's on the verge of happening. They want him, they're interested in him. He's certainly on their radar. There have been some tentative talks, but they're certainly not at the stage of making a bid for him or offering him a contract. And it's a very difficult deal to do because you're talking about a player who's got 4 years left on his contract. Dortmund have already lost two of their best players already in this transfer window. And he would cost 55 to 60 million. I think it may well happen, but it's not going to happen tomorrow. It needs a lot more work. And if City are trying to make their move for Aubameyang, they're going to have some competition as well, you'd think.
Yeah, I can imagine. James, there's a lot about this move which doesn't make sense. Dortmund don't really have to sell. They're already selling quite a few of their star players.
Yeah.
Man City, the one place that you on the pitch where you think that's not going to change is up front, because they've got Sergio Aguero. So it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. I mean, would Aubameyang compete with Aguero, or would he complement him? Would Guardiola play two up front? I mean, that seems unlikely.
I think if you're Guardiola and you're looking at a City squad, I think you've already identified Wilfred Bony as not being fit for purpose for a Champions League team. He's not fit for purpose. His job was to support Aguero, play the cup games, play the dead rubbers in the league, chip him with 15, 20 goals a season, and he's not good enough to do that. I never thought he'd be good enough for Man City, basically. I think Swansea got a dream of a deal there. I think they're potentially looking at buying him back this summer as well. I think Aubameyang is a strange signing. He's not very a Guardiola signing. If you look at the number nines he normally buys, it was Ibrahimovic and Lewandowski. He's complete opposite of that. He's a counter-attacking player, and so is Aguero, I think. But then again, Aguero's been tried at City with quite a traditional number nine in the Gredo and Boney before, and it's not really worked. I'd be a bit worried if I was Kelechi Iheanacho. I think he keeps getting compared to Marcus Rashford. He's about 18 months older, but he has fantastic potential. Does that potentially mean he's going to be loaned out next season? For me, it doesn't really add up from Dortmund's end either. They've sold Hummels, they've sold Gundogan already. They've already signed, I think, six players this window.
Sounds like Mkhitaryan might be leaving. Under.
Yeah, and Henrik Mkhitaryan is fluttering his eyelashes at Arsenal, isn't he? So, yeah, it doesn't make sense from either end, but that doesn't mean it won't happen. And from Aubameyang's end, he always mentions that his deceased granddad said he made a promise to him that he wanted to play for Real Madrid.
Mm.
Benzema's been there for 6 years. Benzema does a great job for Real Madrid, but this is freakish for Real Madrid to keep one striker for 6 years. They almost change players out of boredom just to keep themselves busy. So I can see Real Madrid getting involved.
Yeah, Greg, does this signal if City sign Aubameyang, does that mean Aguero might be on the way out? You know, Guardiola's done this before at previous clubs. He seems to join the club and then the star striker packs his bags. You know, would that be on the cards? It would seem absurd.
I can't see it, Nick. Never say never. I think he's flirted with move to Real Madrid in the past. He's spoken about wanting to go back to Argentina at the end of his contract. I think the plan would be to have them both in the squad and have the most formidable strikers
so
in
fast,
Europe.
That would be a terrifying strike force.
Yeah, I mean, I think Aubameyang, I'm not sure he's the signing City need, but for the Premier League, he's almost perfect on the counter-attack. If he was in the Arsenal, Chelsea, Man United team, he would massively improve any of those sides. The only side he wouldn't walk in and improve hugely is Man City, probably.
Yeah, weirdly
enough. Everyone focuses on Aubameyang's pace, and he is absolutely rapid, as FIFA 16, 17, whatever tells us. But he's a better finisher than people give him credit for as well. Aguero's the best finisher, I think, for a centre-forward in the world. Just you give him that half a yard and he'll take a mile and a goal. But Aubameyang, you look at Aubameyang's finish away at Liverpool in the Europa League. He hit that on the half volley when it bobbled in front of him on the stretch, and he pinged it in the top right hand corner at Mignolet's near hand post. He's a fantastic finisher, and he's quite good in the air as well. So it might work better than we think.
Surprisingly at all. And also the rumoured £55 million fee makes, you know, probably managers and directors around the world sort of gulp quite loudly, because that, if that says anything, it says that the paucity of top class strikers that there are available, and if Arsenal were interested in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, which
you're not now,
but Arsenal are very interested in Jamie Vardy, which one of the most like absurd transfer rumours, which actually seems to have become a reality, which I've ever heard of, Stobes. It was said that he was going to come to a decision. There was an offer on the table. Then there were rumours of a counter offer from Leicester, and then a better offer from Arsenal. Can you break this down for us? I mean, exactly what happened and what is the situation right now with Jamie Vardy to Arsenal?
Yeah, well, I spoke to people very close to Vardy last weekend, and they assured me that he wanted to go to Arsenal. Mm-hmm. Arsenal were favourites, and the deal would be done by Monday. And that with Leicester, it was a case of just giving them the respect of listening to any counter-offer they might have. Mm-hmm. But it sounded like he'd already made his mind up, and then we saw Olivier Giroud come out and say something quite similar, actually. Mm-hmm. But it's not happened, has it? And the longer it goes on, the more you think, well, if he's going to go to Arsenal, he'd know by now and he would have made the decision. And the longer it goes on, the more likely I think it is actually he's going to really embarrass Arsenal and turn them down to stay at Leicester.
Is it the ultimate double bluff, the ultimate agent move that he's pulled?
Well, I don't think it's about money. I mean, he was earning 70,000. He's old. We know that, well, for a footballer. He's 29 years old. He turns 30 in January. Mm-hmm. So it could be his last big contract. He's earning about £70,000 a week. And I think Arsenal offered him around £100,000. Leicester haven't offered much less with their counter offer. But I don't think it's about money. I think obviously the emotional attachment to Leicester after the season they've had is very strong. They're a team that are built around him, with Mahrez and Drinkwater feeding him, whereas at Arsenal, you know, slower build-up play, less space in behind, maybe it wouldn't suit him. But he's got a big decision to make, because this chance isn't going to come again, and I think it's his only opportunity to join an elite club. And last weekend, that's what his people close to him were saying. They're saying he realises if he turns down Arsenal, that's it. He's not going to have another chance to join an established, regular Champions League side. And I think that lure should have been too much for him to turn down.
James, very simple question. You know, there's reports that Jamie Vardy's going to decide after England are done with the Euros. Should Arsenal wait for Jamie Vardy?
I mean, it's £20 million, isn't it, roughly, the fee?
Mm-hmm.
I think even though he's 29, like, not everything has to be in football plans 2-3 years ahead. That's been Arsenal's undoing, is always on tomorrow. Like, focus on today a little bit more. Even if you get 2 years out of Vardy, that's £10 million per season. How much Champions League football's worth now, if he gets you 10, 15 goals in all competitions those seasons, complementing other players, then it's a very good deal, I think, for Arsenal. And like Greg said, this deal isn't going to come up again for Vardy. I thought what was interesting is over in France, Arsene Wenger gave an interview where he said he doesn't think Vardy will start for England at the Euros.
Yeah.
Which seemed a very strange timing, but the more you think about it, it is basically his way of saying, you shouldn't blow this, mate. You should probably come to Arsenal. Well, these offers don't come around all the time. Yeah. It's sort of sowing the seed.
This is a one-time thing.
It's a sort of drop quote. Wenger wouldn't dare pull in England and would accuse other managers of unsettling players, but because it's over in France and it's a little less reported, kind of went under the radar a bit. But I agree. It'd be interesting to see how it matches up stylistically, but I think if you're Arsenal, you've got to absolutely wait. You can't keep looking back on players you missed out on, like Suarez. The ball's up with that release clause. Like, just get the man, even if you have to wait a couple of weeks. It's only a couple of weeks, isn't it? Yeah. Fingers out there every game anyway. Like, yeah. It just makes sense to wait.
Yeah.
Well, I do wonder if they turned to Vardy in the first place because they heard something about Alvaro Morata, because all the noise from Arsenal was that Morata was their number one target. But it's an awfully complicated deal with Real Madrid buying him back and then selling him on. And there's competition. You've got Chelsea and Man United who have been looking at him as well. And I do wonder whether they moved for Vardy pretty quickly. It came out of nowhere, didn't it?
Yeah.
I do wonder whether Vardy's become not only their first choice, but their only choice, and they desperately need a striker because fans will go mad, won't they, Nick, if you start another season with Olivier Giroud up there?
Well, you were saying earlier on in the season, this kind of backs up what you were saying, is that Wenger's looking to spend money and really plug the gaps that there are in the squad. But this seems like just a huge gamble. You know, it seems like I've never known Arsene Wenger to take this much of a risk. Like on a transfer, it seems like a very risky transfer, doesn't it?
It's not very like Wenger. Firstly, it makes you wonder, is this his last year?
Yeah.
Is he really going for it? Because he knows he's got one more year. No, he's always been...
Then he's got the England job.
Yeah. Well, he's always been looking 4 or 5 years ahead, and he's always treated the club's money like his own. And we know there's, you know, 190 odd million sitting in cash in the bank. They can afford to buy these players,
but
he's terrified about, you know, A, looking stupid, and B, losing money.
It's Ferguson and Van Persie all over again, isn't it? Mm. Just win me that
Van
one
Persie, Van Persie
win me that
better.
Title, yeah.
Van Persie was a lot
better. It's the legacy buy, isn't it? I don't really care what comes after me now. I want to go out on a high and win something. Score me some goals, win me the title. I'll ride off into the sunset.
It'd be a hell of a title win with Guardiola and Mourinho seemingly in some sort of bizarre nuclear football transfer arms race for the Premier League title. More transfer news. Obviously, everyone lost their minds when Jurgen Klopp was spotted at a Copa America game and left only 2 minutes after Gonzalo Higuain was substituted off the pitch.
Wasn't he sitting next to his brother as well?
Apparently.
I think the guy looked more like Juan Mata than it was Gonzalo Higuain's brother.
There you go, Mata to Liverpool.
Yeah, it's just a guy with a beard, wasn't it? Like, man with beard spotted with Jurgen Klopp. That was basically the story.
Yeah, I mean, Stobes, is there any substance to Higuain to Liverpool? And, you know, what sort of... It would take a huge amount of money. Napoli don't want to sell him, do they?
Well, they quoted Chelsea £65 million.
Lord.
And that's put Chelsea off quite a lot, so I can't see Liverpool going. I can't see Liverpool going. He's a fantastic player, but I can't see Liverpool doing it. I haven't spoken to anyone up there, but it did look yesterday like they were briefing pretty heavily against it to the local press, saying that they've got no interest at all in Higuain. Maybe they're playing down expectations, but I think more likely than not, they're being very honest and saying this one is not a goer.
There's other areas of the squad as well that needs revamping before a centre forward. We've got Daniel Sturridge. Like, he's good. Maybe Firmino was getting very good in big games, in particular at the end of the season. You give him a run in the right position.
Origi.
Yeah, Origi's coming on leaps and bounds. Benteke, if you sell him, he's still an option. He's still got
Danny Ings.
Yeah, him to come back
useful
as well. So buy a good centre-half. Don't ever let Martin Skrtel play for you again. That should be priority number one.
It sounds like he's going to Turkey, though. So that's all's well that
only because Barra turned him down. That's the level of player we're talking about now. But it's more exciting to look at the young players they could potentially sign from the Bundesliga. Jonas Hector, Mahmoud Dahoud. There's countless other players where Klopp's using his scouting system and his contacts in Germany. No Premier club has that. No Premier club cherry picks the best players from the Bundesliga. They either buy big £30 million players. Let's get the £6-7 million deals, and that's where Liverpool should be targeting.
Thinking more about Higuain, he set the record for the most, you know, most goals in a single 20-team season in Serie A. I mean, that is a difficult league, especially at the moment. Everyone's very defensively focused. He's doing a great job of scoring the goals. What's I mean, is anyone going to take a punt on Higuain?
PSG, I could see doing it.
Yeah,
so I don't think. I personally think PSG are going to go on big on two strikers this summer. They've got a bit more money due to financial fair play to play with. Zlatan's leaving. They've got a pretty settled midfield. Maybe Kante might be a bargain at 20, 25 million to replace Motta eventually. The back four looks pretty taken care of. They've got two very good keepers in Sirigu and Trapp. They've got Areola out on loan at Villarreal. So all they need to take care of really is a number nine to replace Zlatan.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're of the mind that Cavani's not quite up to it. And he's not. Not for what PSG wants to do. That's why he's always shoved out wide. So I could see them potentially going for Higuain. They don't care if they spend 60 million. It's PSG. It's what they do. It's what they're created for. And potentially Lukaku, I could see maybe going there.
Greg's nodding furiously.
Well, on Higuain, the wages aren't that much of a problem. £150,000 a week at that level isn't the problem.
It's not
the
what you'd expect.
It's the money Napoli would want.
Mm.
He's got his release clause is even more. I think his release clause is 90-odd million euros. Chelsea certainly have held conversations and run a mile because they can't see the fee going down. They wanted to pay about £40 million for him. But like Macca says, PSG, it's a real statement signing for him.
He's not with Di Maria as well.
Yeah. And a bit like Ibra, he's not a player who relies necessarily on blistering pace. So you could probably get 3 or 4 years at least out of him that level.
Almost the perfect league for him. He's stereotypically a striker who struggled on the big occasion, on the big stage. And
he's reached that point of his career. He just wants to win something. And you'll definitely win something playing for PSG. And I think they're being more of a credible threat in the Champions League now.
So, but what's best for Gonzalo? What's best?
Going to PSG.
Going to PSG, all right.
If they appoint Unai Emery as well, Spanish-speaking coach, might help.
That might actually seal the deal. Very, very good point. Let's talk about the one transfer rumour, which, I don't know, it's definitely doing my head in. It's Zlatan Ibrahimovic to Man United. Is this getting boring now? Are we done with this? Is it happening? Is it going to happen?
Yeah, it's going to happen.
All right,
it's
okay.
Really annoying waiting for it, and Zlatan playing with us. There's a few things at play. I don't think it's been fully agreed. I think they're still haggling a little bit over the exact terms of the deal. I think United have offered him a one-year deal and he wants with an option. He wants a straight two-year deal. A bit of negotiating going on about wages, as always, when a player's earning £250,000, £300,000 a week. But it will happen eventually. Just announce it and get it done with, please.
Be patient out there.
I was done with Zlatan as soon as that Dare to Zlatan thing happened. It's just too much now. Like the ego has overtaken his absurd amount of football ability, and I can't even. It's just too much. Like holding a press conference to tease people about a clothing line you've coming out. Like, come on, man. Like,
have a word with yourself.
Go back to your day job. Yeah,
have a word with yourself. I mean, speaking of his incredible ability, I mean, just a couple of quick stats on Zlatan. He's got the second most international goals by active European players. Can you guess who's number one on that list?
Ronaldo.
No, Ronaldo's third.
No idea.
Robbie Keane. Robbie Keane is 67. And also, no player in Europe's top five leagues scored more goals from outside the area this season than Zlatan Ibrahimovic.
There you go.
Ping. He's only three away from Platini's European Championship record as
same
well.
Same as Cristiano Ronaldo.
Same as Ronaldo. So that could be interesting to keep an eye on. One signing that is confirmed for Manchester United, thankfully, is Eric Bailly, the Villarreal centre-back, has moved to Manchester United. Good signing, Greg? What do you reckon?
I don't know an awful lot about him, to be honest.
Nobody does. Nobody does.
I mean, it caught us all a little bit by surprise. They've been people at United have been talking about John Stones and Rafael Varane, and then they've gone for Bailly. The theory, according to people at United, is Mourinho thinks he can do with him. He thinks he's raw. Macca might have seen a bit more of him than me, but apparently he's pretty raw, but bags of potential, and he wants to do what he did with the likes of Kurt Azuma and Rafael Varane. He wants to do it with Eric Bailly. I know he fouled a lot of people last season, didn't he? He got 10 yellow cards and a red card as well.
11 yellow cards, more fouls than any other Villarreal player. He only played 25 games.
Packing him in, isn't he?
Yeah, he's packing him in. I mean, he's a tidy little player, but literally the only stat I could find about him was Eric Bailly made 2.9 interceptions per league game last season. Only Fosu Mensah at Man United did better than him in that regard. So that is a niche stat to make someone look good.
That is, but I think what's interesting about Eric, I'm calling him Eric Bailly, so he sounds like a Corrie character.
I'm loving it.
Yeah,
loving
Eric
it
Bailly,
already.
It's like he's from Ermston or something like that. just drop that in. There you go, Ermston. Shout out to Ermston. But he's about 6'1", I think. I think he's got there are suspicions that he plays himself into trouble sometimes. Everyone says that he's a monster in the air. He looks rapid from clips that I've seen.
He's very quick.
But he's got a mistake in him. So maybe they've spent... It just shows you they may not have paid $30 million for Rio Ferdinand. And he wasn't by far the finished article. But Rio Ferdinand had played in like a Champions League quarterfinal. He had quite a few England caps. Been to a couple of major international tournaments. That's what it got you 10, 12 years ago. Look what it gets you now. He cost Villarreal $4.2 million, I think it was, from Espanyol in 2014. So he's gone from $4.2 million to £30 million off about 30-odd league starts, which is absurd, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
And it's he might not even be first choice next season. It could be Smalling and one other. I personally don't think Man United are done looking for another centre-half.
Yeah, they need another one, don't they?
I mean, Phil Jones is done.
He's broken.
He doesn't have a position either. Even he's 25 and he doesn't have a position still. And Daley Blind is not a Mourinho centre-half, is he?
Stobes, have you heard? I mean, what Mourinho's plan is for Eric Bailly? Is it to bring him in as a starter, and then he's renowned for being able to turn good defenders into great defenders? Mourinho, with his discipline, his rigidness, is that the plan, to make him sort of the sturdy one or the attacker next to Smalling? I mean, what's his thinking with this signing? It's a huge amount of money.
I don't know. I don't really know, mate, to be honest.
Fair enough.
What you would
Thought
say?
I'd try it.
Yeah. I mean, we know Mourinho's really good on the training ground with centre backs. Mm. You would think, from what we know about him, that could do with some experience next to him. So it will be interesting to see if United go out there and, like Macca says, buy another centre-back, because I certainly don't think it would do any harm. And Chris Smalling's also a player who likes to attack the ball and pinch the ball. So maybe they're a bit too similar. Maybe bring someone in with a bit of experience who will sweep up a bit more, and someone he can learn from.
I think Smalling is quite vulnerable when you put him in wide areas. He got sent off against City in the Manchester derby in Van Gaal's first season, in that wide area down the right-hand side. He got exposed a lot during the FA Cup final, got sent off again. And Eric Bailly, as I'm going to persistently call him, he's very quick. So he's good at facing, turning around and running back to his own goal. Smalling is, but he's very vulnerable down in wide areas. Bailly perhaps is not. Maybe that's the plan.
And just like the Champions League, which United aren't on, he's in Coronation Street, which is also at the same time 7:30 on Wednesdays, which is fantastic. That's all we've got time for, I'm afraid, this week. Thank you very much for listening. Please subscribe to the Squawker Talker on iTunes. During the Euros, we're going to be doing two shows a week. There's lots to come. Me and Greg Johnson, we're going to be hosting loads of shows, lots of analysis, lots of stats, and loads of breaking news from Stobart yourself. You're going to be in France, aren't you?
I'll be out there. I'm really looking forward to it.
Okay, fantastic. Well, thanks very much to both of our guests, James McManus and Greg Stobart, and we will see you very soon. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.